2011. The record should reflect that we have a quorum present. Starting from my right, we have Senator McGuire and Senator French, Senator Wilikowski, my co-chair, Senator Wagner, myself, Senator Pascven. I anticipate that we'll be joined shortly by Senator Stedman. We have in the audience, I see Senator Giesel. Is there anyone else? I see no other elected officials. But anyway, we please, everyone, turn off your cell phones. Even if it's on vibrate, it interferes with the transmission. So please turn off your cell phones. The purpose of today's meeting is, again, to take up Senate Bill 42 relating to power projects in the Alaska Energy Authority. We hope to hear today more from the bill sponsor about a variety of issues that have been raised by committee members. For starters, it's clear that these are major changes to the authority and mission of AEA. This legislation seeks to thrust AEA into a more central role, and it appears that AEA may become the state of Alaska's de facto Department of Energy. The overall implications should be clearly understood, as well as the motives that may be operational here. Two of my questions ultimately to the bill sponsor is, does AEA essentially seek to become the state's de facto Department of Energy? And if so, what is the motive and what is a broader vision of AEA beyond Susitna? It seems that the passage of this legislation would distance the legislature from decision-making about energy projects, and perhaps some could view that result as a satisfactory change. It has been stated that it can become a challenge when legislators control funding for programs or individual projects and create more rather than less uncertainty in the energy sector, because there is not a clearly defined process at this time to proceed with energy priorities. Again, specifically to the bill sponsor, does the bill sponsor agree with this assessment? Is it in fact the intent of this bill to distance the legislature from decision-making about energy projects so that there will be a more clearly defined process to proceed with a variety of energy priorities? Also with this legislation, it appears that the AEA is creating a fund to hold large sums of money. How will that fund be utilized is a question that I believe members of this committee are looking for answers on that topic. I'm also curious to know if the powers and duties of AEA are modeled after a successful parallel organization in another state. If so, this committee would like to hear more about that, whether there is a parallel state, another organization in a different state. Finally, the governor's January 31st energy report to the legislature, and this was a report that arose out of the co-sponsor or the co-chairs of energy a year ago, Senate Bill 220. It offers strong support for Senate Bill 42. However, that report from the governor dated January 31st has not yet been mentioned, I believe, to this committee. And I guess what we'd like to understand is the reason why, you know, after two full hearings on this bill, the governor's energy report has not been presented or referred to in the testimony as support for this legislation. And so the question becomes also is whether the bill sponsor is aware of any other reports or studies that support this legislation that have not been included in the bill packet. After the bill sponsor has had the opportunity to address these questions and others from the committee, we will resume the public testimony on Senate Bill 42. And my committee looks forward to an informative discussion on this, and it is not my intent of the chairs today to move Senate Bill 42, so we are going to continue to hold this and wanting to receive information on these topics. So with that introduction, I would welcome Sarah Fisher-Gold to Senate Resources on this Wednesday.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Sarah Fisher-Gold, Executive Director of the Alaska Energy Authority. And Mr. Chairman, I did receive some information with respect to the questions you're going to ask. It was only about 15 minutes ago, so I'm armed with some paper, and I may jump around a little bit, but I think I can at least get the discussion started with respect to what this bill does and in the broader sense. is first just going back a bit in the history in 1993, as was mentioned in prior testimony, the legislature stripped AEA of some significant powers and duties, including owning new projects and also the ability to hire employees. And that is when ADA employees, including the executive director, became the administrators or managers of AEA programs that at that point were just down to the basic of what AEA owned at the time. And that at the time it was the Four Dam Pool projects, Larsen Bay project, the Alaska Intertie, and the Bradley Lake Hydroelectric project.
If we could interject, not only while they're moving the screen, but also that the record should reflect that we have been joined by Senator Stedman. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In 1993, the Division of Energy was created in the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. So a lot of the projects that and programs that used to be under AEA went under the Division of Energy. So moving forward, you had a distinct corporation, which was AEA, that had a board of directors that were the same members of AEDA, became the board of directors of AEA, and the executive director of AEDA was the executive director of AEA. And it was a relatively small group of folks that were, worked on those AEA issues. But the pre-93 AEA also included this Division of Energy, which now became the Division of Energy over in Department of Community and Regional Affairs. In 1999, when the legislature removed the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, there was the issue on all of the programs that were in DCRA, what happens to those programs. And I believe at the time there were programs that went to the Department of Labor and then the Department of Commerce and Economic Development incorporated a lot of those projects. At that time, the Division of Energy wasn't moved to the Department of Commerce and Community and Economic Development. The Division of Energy programs were returned to the authority of the Alaska Energy Authority. And in fact, if under the powers and duties of AEA under AS 4483, there was a reference put into the powers and duties. And forgive me, if I had a bit more time, I would have double-checked the reference on this, but I believe that the powers and duties in 1999 in AEA were changed to carry out the powers and duties assigned to it under AS 4245. That's those Division of Energy programs. So in some respects, on this idea that AEA essentially seeks to become the state de facto Department of Energy, in some respects the legislature started a path of not creating a Department of Energy, but reinstituting AEA as a corporation with very broad powers, not just owning projects. In 1999, the legislature moved towards reestablishing AEA as a corporation with broader programs. So the grant programs, the power cost equalization program, the loan programs, and at the time, a very small alternative energy program was moved into the powers and duties of AEA. What they didn't change at that time was the structure of AEA. The folks that ran those programs as the Division of Energy then became ADA employees. And so they kept with the same model of ADA employees providing the management of AEA programs, but they broadened the AEA programs. Most of the next, I would say, 7 to 8 years, probably up to about 2008, our programs were very concentrated on rural energy programs and the construction of a lot of projects with Denali Commission funds in rural Alaska. In 2008, there was a need and a increasing pressure or desire to have a bit more of a focus on AEA as the energy authority, and this idea with this connection with AEDA is energy programs shouldn't be run by the bankers. I believe that was something that I heard, and because AEDA AEDA is kind of known as it's a financing agency and a strong tie to the to the banking. Their primary program is a loan participation program. And so ADA has a lot of relationships with the banking industry. And so that was used, and maybe not in necessarily the, I guess, internal to the agency, I'm not sure that was exactly accurate, but there was a desire to see a increased emphasis and focus on energy programs. So at the time, they created the ability for ADA to hire a separate executive director from the ADA executive director. So, and I know I covered this in prior testimony, but I think it's not really the state de facto Department of Energy. I think when the discussions last year came up with do we need a Department of Energy, I think there was a lot of discussion on, well, most of the programs are in this entity called the Alaska Energy Authority. So of the discussions on creating a Department of Energy, and although I don't think it was ever in a Senate bill last year, the version that created a Department of Energy didn't really change AEA as a corporation. It just made AEA fall in under this different umbrella department, not being the Department of Commerce. So the AEA programs really didn't change much, even under that original structure that was discussed. And, of course, through the deliberative process and the passage of SB 220, there was the development of the, well, instead of doing something like a Department of Energy, or there's a lot of questions, how about a report with respect to an analysis of what makes sense for the powers and duties of AEA and the relationship between ADA. The governor's report mentions the introduction of House Bill 103 and Senate Bill 42. And, of course, the Susitna project is a very large project that everybody is interested in, and we have been actually for years through AEA been working on looking at the reports that were done in the 1980s AEA and moving forward, that, you know, the Susitna project has taken up a lot of interest and interest through the discussion of 103 and House Bill 103 and Senate Bill 42. But these other aspects in the legislation do recognize the analysis that was required in the report, that there should be some additional powers of AEA restored. The report recognizes, and the legislation reflects, the legislation introduced by the governor reflects the, you know, the analysis and where the administration thinks AEA should be, what AEA should be structured like and look like moving forward. So I guess I'm not sure if it's really the de facto Department of Energy, but I think when you look at the analysis of do we need a Department of Energy, well, if you have a corporation that's fulfilling and has all the programs, most of the programs that deal with energy policy programs and financing, and the legislature through the years has recognized that AEA has the expertise in their programs. We have staff that understand these programs, and the legislature has given us more responsibility through the years with the Renewable Energy Fund program and most recently the Emerging Energy Technology Fund, in addition to some significant capital appropriations to fulfill fulfill the projects and fund the projects that the legislature wants us to be involved in. In addition, we've also been financed to do some significant regional planning. So AEA has a beyond a Susitna project or on the Lowatana project on the Susitna River, the department has a statewide presence and has had a statewide presence. In my opinion, really the start of this was back in 1999 with the Division of Energy being incorporated back into the department, or excuse me, into the authority. So I guess with respect to the motive, like for AEA to have employees and the ability to own and operate and construct new projects, in my opinion, that's really just kind of a again, a bit more of a natural progression to AEA having a bit more of a focus on energy and truly operating as a state corporation. With respect to the legislation distancing the legislature from decision-making about energy projects, or for individual projects, as I mentioned in testimony earlier on Senate Bill 42, the way that this Alaska Energy Fund is structured in the legislation and the repeal of the existing Railroad Energy Fund, those are certainly issues that are, this is appropriate in the deliberative process to determine how does the legislature want to interact with this process. And the legislature has chosen for AEA programs to do it differently depending on the program. The Renewable Energy Fund has tremendous strings attached with the legislature approving projects after we've evaluated them. It becomes a grant recommendation program, and we go into a fiscal year cycle through the capital budget. As a bit of a difference, the Emerging Energy Technology Fund is a capitalized fund that after we're done evaluating the projects and determining which projects we should fund, we can issue grants without further legislative appropriation. So those are two examples of funds that we have that have different levels of legislative control. And right now, of course, even the creation of this fund in the AEA statutes does not, it still needs to be capitalized. And that's where I think it's appropriate to have the conversation with respect to, do you want legislative approval for any project that we fund out of that program, or is there some other process? Do you want us to establish regulations to determine which projects make the most sense? Is there a regional planning process adopted by, the local utilities, for example, that would then provide us the structure that you would want? I mean, there's a variety of ways that have been done in the past and used as examples that we can do something to structure that where the legislature has the appropriate level of control. And ultimately, the control over that is the money that goes into the fund and how you want us to establish the program for the money to come out of the fund. And that's something that I think is definitely up for debate and consideration and how that should be done. So I guess I don't think the intent of the bill is to distance the legislature from decision-making about energy projects. But I think that is something that we need to have the discussion on, where do you want the control, at the establishment of the fund or of the money coming out of the fund? Or should there be no fund and it should just be based on a year-to-year capital project basis, which is actually another way that the legislature has done that. With respect to powers and duties of AEA being modeled after a successful parallel organization in another state, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I'd have to do some research on that. I guess I've been more focused on what AEA looked like prior to 1993, the changes in 99, and what we're looking at today. So it's one of those, it's a very Alaskanized organization. There's, I think, other entities that are called energy authorities that have different powers and duties. I think there are some that operate more like a utility, perhaps, not, a state corporation. And with respect to the governor's energy report, I do believe in my earlier testimony, it was mentioned that this was a reaction of the legislation coming out was also mentioned in the report. We had a specific hearing also on the Sustainable Energy Act report that I believe the legislation was mentioned at that time before the legislation was heard in the committees. So if it hasn't been mentioned enough, I think I apologize if that hasn't been emphasized. And again, it's the Susitna project has caused a lot of focus on the legislation, but the legislation does have, you know, a broader scope and purpose. And to me, it is primarily the aspect of what should AEA look like, not just today, but in the future, to address the energy needs of this state. And I think through the years, though, just by evidence of the projects and the programs that we run, typically AEA is involved in the discussion as an agency, and typically since 1999 has been really the go-to if we have these energy programs, where should they go? And it seems to be focused in at AEA. So, again, I think it is a bit more of a natural progression on evaluating where AEA was, what programs and projects that they have, and what powers and duties AEA should have moving forward. There's over 70 people that are ADA employees. And as we structured the legislation to move those PCNs to AEA, we have it set up for 42 PCNs to be moved to AEA. More than half of the employees of ADA focus and concentrate on AEA programs. And I think, in my opinion, the folks that do concentrate on the AEA programs identify themselves as AEA staff. This is also just a way to kind of formalize that the rural energy group that we have and the energy alternative energy programs and group that we have and the power cost equalization program, those folks run AEA programs. They may have an ADA email address, and they may have an ADA PCN, but they run AEA programs. So, you know, internally, there's not going to be much of a difference for people who already identify themselves as AEA staff. It's really a recognition that, you know, this is what people do, and it is kind of in some ways a truth in budgeting. And it's reflected in the fiscal notes, approximately $5 million of AEA appropriations are transferred over to ADA to pay for staff. And so it's kind of an oddity in the existing AEA budget where we have this huge contractual expense and you don't really reflect it in a personal services line. It's all kind of blended over in the ADA program. So that's another reason to do it. It's maybe a little bit more technical and detail orientated, but it is something that is, to me, a bit more of a truth in budgeting. Because we're showing expenses on the AEA side as interagency receipt funded, but on the ADA side, we're showing it as an AEA expense. So we're counting those costs twice. And this is one way to kind of reflect a little bit more accurately that there's a significant amount of AEA funds that do pay for staff. So, Mr. Chairman, I do thank you for asking these questions and allowing the time and opportunity for us to have this discussion. And I do look forward to working with you and Senator Wagner and the other members of the committee with respect to addressing the concerns that there have been with the legislation. And I've tried to have conversations with members of the committee with respect to their concerns. And again, look forward to continuing those conversations to work on legislation that meets the intent of what the governor was expecting when it was introduced, and also to have AEA be able to serve really as the Alaska Energy Authority.
Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. More of a comment than anything else, but I just wanted to thank the co-chairs for the CS. I had a lot of concerns about the original bill. I know other members did as well. I think the bill's purpose, when it was originally sent to us, as I understood it, was to help us get started on a Susitna Hydro project. And I think what it turned out to be was much more encompassing, much more far-reaching than I certainly had hoped for or expected. I think some of the changes might be worth discussing, but I don't know if this bill is the proper vehicle for that. I think, at least from my perspective, my goal is to try to get us started on a Susitna Hydro project. I know I had expressed concerns about the procurement issue, and that's a concern that the small contractors came to me with, and I dug up the talked a little bit about it, but there was an audit just 2.5 years ago where here's the finding. This is the quote: not only do AEA's procurement policies and procedures not comply with federal and state procurement procedures, but they are not consistent with good procurement practices. So I know the contractors have, I don't know if it's lingering effects from that, but I think turning over more procurement authority to you, exempting you from state law, is not prudent at this point, certainly based on those findings. Other concerns that I had with the bill: taking away legislative oversight and authority over billions of dollars and essentially all power projects in the rail belt. Another concern was allowing AEA to hire and fire based on purely political reasons if you chose, making all your employees exempt, which causes me a great concern, particularly when you look at the past history of the AEA and what's happened in the past over there. And then the other concern was the fact that the seeking of removal from regulatory oversight. So, I support a bill that gets us a Susitna Hydro project that moves us closer to that. I think this version does that much better than the original version. We can talk about the other things. I don't know if this is the proper vehicle for those. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
For purpose of clarification, there's no CS. That's, we have rough drafts. It's just conceptual concepts, so we don't want to get ahead of ourselves here at all. But, Senator Wagner.
That's what I was going to say.
Okay, there you go. I believe that the concept of the Susitna-Watonna project with a transmission line is something that, we're interested in making sure that the state of Alaska can make the appropriate applications to FERC, as has been previously discussed, so that this process can begin. And so I think that is something that we want to make sure we advance. Senator French.
Well, on the topic of sort of Susitna versus the bill we have in front of us, the CS on page 3, lines 4 through 6, gives the authority of the power to make grants for power projects and electrical transmission lines. Say we pass this bill, we gavel out and go home, and sometime in the summer, the authority decides that the real power project they want to get behind is Mount Spur. They've come to us and asked us for an electrical transmission line and a road, and they're both going to be very expensive. And say the authority says, Watonna's not that good of an idea, but the Mount Spur, that's where we want to go. And suddenly what I thought was a bill that would authorize Mount Watonna is now being directed to an electrical transmission line to Mount Spur. Is that possible under this bill the way it stands right now?
Through the chair, Senator French, no, it's not. This creation of the fund isn't being capitalized. It wouldn't be capitalized in this legislation. And as I had mentioned in my earlier testimony, I think there are legitimate questions with respect to how AEA and how the legislature would interact with respect to should there be additional legislative oversight before funds are granted from the fund, and that's something that I think we should discuss. Do you want us to go through a regulatory process for determining which projects should be funded? When we've received, there's a variety of ways that we've done this. Again, I mentioned the Renewable Energy Fund has some very, very strong strings attached with respect to how we do this. We run a grant recommendation program. We provide the list to the legislature. The legislature decides to fund or not fund the list. The Emerging Energy Technology Fund program is another one where there's money in a fund, and once we are through our process, an RFA process, it's a competitive application process. Once we are through that process, we can issue the grants without further legislative appropriations. So I guess in my opinion, I don't think we would be in a circumstance. First of all, there's no money in the fund, and
Let's set aside the money question. I mean, we
Senator French, I want to make sure that it's we clarify there is no CS before the
committee. I'm talking about that.
And I understand that. I just anyway.
I'm working off backslash A.
Okay.
Yep. I'm working off backslash A, the bill we brought in front of the committee at the last hearing. So that's the only one I have, the only one I'm asking questions from. And the question I had was on the language in front of us, page 3, lines 4 through 6. And I recognize that there's going to be a separate appropriation, but in the backup material to this bill, there was a reference to the $67 million that's in the Rail Belt Energy Fund. The bill envisions taking that money, dumping it into the Alaska Rail Belt Energy Fund. And so I guess I'm just and you mentioned that now, and what we're working on, I guess, as a committee is how we put sideboards on the expenditure of that money, and what sort of oversight we have, what sort of input, whether we give you a grant authority to spend $1 million without coming back to us, or whether it's got to be more specific. But I am certainly something that's very much on my mind. And,
through the chair, Senator French, the Southeast Energy Fund has been created in the AEA statutes, and I believe there's a proposed appropriation to put $10 million into that fund. The way I read the statute, there isn't anything that the money would go into the fund. And the way I read the statute, I don't think there's any further legislative authority needed for us to issue grants under that fund. However, I guess as the executive director and looking at ways that we would make sure that we do this in some type of, have a criteria or an objective process, if we had a fund that we were to issue grants for, our process has been to go through a public process, first of all, establish regulations, that give us the sideboards with respect to what we would do, and that's what we've done with the Renewable Energy Fund, and we have draft regulations for the Emerging Energy Technology Fund. So we would go through a regulatory process, and then probably, at least for a grant program, would go through some type of solicitation, a competitive process, to issue those grants. Unless we are managing a grant to name recipient that the legislature specifically puts in a capital budget, we go through some type of process. Early on, for the federal Denali Commission funds, we established with the Denali Commission a deficiency list for both bulk fuel and RPSU projects. And so we ranked and determined what the priority, if we get federal money, this is the way we will establish the process. In my experience with the agency, and especially, as a manager working through this, we have to defend our processes. We have to go through a process to make sure that we aren't seen as being subjective with the money that is expended. So we go through a process to make sure that we have objective criteria to determine how that money should be spent if we're given the authority to do that. So.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you. And through the chair, can you describe for me, for the committee, I think, what led up to the bill? Because I think that in my conversations with you and Joe Griffith and other members that I see here from the utilities, if I might for just a second before, Mr. Chairman, I ask my question, what I am hearing is that there are, and what we learned in the last 2 years, is that there are literally millions of dollars worth of energy infrastructure projects that are needed throughout the state and in the rail belt in particular. And I myself have a bill that we wrote over the interim that was aimed at doing something kind of similar, going through ADA as a lending authority, creating a principal and spinning off project money. But I think what's happening here today is there's a little bit of confusion on the part of members in that we've gotten so focused on Susitna, which is a very important project, and we can all agree with that. I would like to hear you, if you wouldn't mind, talk a little bit more about the broader goals of the rail belt itself and the broader goals of the bill and how the bill morphed from the Susitna hydro bill into a broader bill. And it may well be that the committee rejects the version A that's before us. Mm-hmm. It may well be that this committee feels most comfortable aligning itself with a project-specific bill, and that's fine. That's for this committee and its leaders to decide. That said, I would just like on the record, and while especially the utilities are here from the Rail Belt, to hear a little bit about those needs and about the thought process that went into doing this. And the final thought I have is that's why, you know, we go through this a lot with DOT, for example, and the AMATS board. It's one of the things that we do with projects in the transportation area and roads, for example, is that we have a central agency that's sort of amasses all the projects out there and then ranks them and lets us know in order of importance these are the ones that need to be built. And I think one of the frustrations that I heard at least in the last couple of years is just this frustration that the capital project assembly itself sometimes can seem like it isn't going through a central process and as if there isn't attention being paid to the things that are the highest on the list. And so I think there's more to the story that you and I have discussed and others have discussed with me about the bill, and I'd like to hear that on the record.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator McGuire, I guess the bill, in my mind, the bill is perhaps maybe a little bit more simple than this being a broad sweeping policy change. For many years there's been discussion on, well, should AEA have the ability to own and construct new projects, and is there a need for AEA to have its own staff? Those have been a couple issues that have been kicked around a lot, and in the last 2 years there had been discussion about that. And as a fully functioning authority, and since we had this project that was before us and an important project that we think we should be pursuing, should we get those? It was kind of a the lines were intersecting, and this seemed to be appropriate time to pursue just a general authority for AEA to construct and own new projects. The biggest limiting factor with respect to AEA is really the finances. It's not, AEA doesn't have a revolving fund. AEA is not like ADA in that respect. ADA has assets. ADA has a profit perspective. AEA does not. AEA owns and manages projects and manages programs for the benefit of the residents of the state of Alaska, and the mission is to reduce the cost of energy. So there are extremely different missions with respect to that. With respect to addressing the needs for the Rail Belt and actually in other regions of the state, through legislative appropriations and direction from the legislature, we've undertaken studies to determine what does make the most sense in an integrated plan. And I know there's some utility representatives who were very involved in the integrated resource plan that AEA's led effort for the Rail Belt that could probably discuss those issues in a little bit more detail. This is one hindrance. This is where I'll put new on the job hand up at this point, where my prior position, I wasn't focused specifically in on the development of that plan, but the purpose is really to take the region and what makes the most sense for projects in the region. And of course there will be continued dialogue with the legislature, the utilities, and the Alaska Energy Authority with respect to how to make that happen and what are the priorities. So I'm hoping that I'm coming at least close to answering that question. But I guess getting back to Senate Bill 42, there's this concept or this idea that this is broad sweeping change, and I guess I'm not sure I agree with that as a broad sweeping change. There's a significant project that a change in our statute will allow us to move forward with. There are these other issues that have been percolating for a while with respect to whether it makes sense for AEA to have the ability to have employees and to own and operate new projects. It's a tool for us to use with respect to addressing the energy needs for the state of Alaska. We can't, without appropriations, pursue anything else in particular. There has to be that dialogue. That's a basic dialogue with the legislature. You know, unless there was some type of a determination that there would be a huge capitalization of AEA and a fund to go out and do these things. And that's not really an issue before us today. So this is kind of, to me, again, a bit more of the next step of AEA being more independent than ADA. So I'm sorry,
Yes, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just in wrap up on it, I just think for the public watching and for people who are very experienced here in the committee, it's important to have this conversation on the table because there's a lot more going on than just version A. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a broader conversation about energy infrastructure in this state. Frankly, the bill itself stems from a report that Senator Wilikowski and I, as the co-chairman, had us come forward last week and present, or the week before, time runs together here. But we asked direction from the administration. We said, we don't have a Department of Energy. We have all of these departments doing different things related to energy. And frankly, it can be confusing for those who are outside of Alaska and even inside the state. So we asked for that direction. We got the direction back. And part of that report was this bill. And so it's a broader statement that's being made in a broader discussion. But it would be, I think, characterized accurately by Senator Pascavan as a departure from what we do today, which is an assembly of energy-related capital items at the finance table with the good senator over there across from me at the helm doing his good work and us doing our good work and then making that budget. This would be a significant departure in terms of allocating, as Senator French said, money under subsection C to a fund that then after that the legislature has no authority over, and yet on the other hand is accountable to voters. It's an interesting question, and I apologize for taking the time on it, but I just think that the voters, the public, people out here need to understand the broader conversation as we move forward into the building of infrastructure in Alaska. It is a very important dialogue. How do we do it?
With that, we do have some people that have signed up to testify. If there's any additional, Senator Stedman?
Yeah, if I could, Mr. Chairman, just briefly make a couple comments. The Southeast Energy Fund was brought up a little earlier, and last year we had modified that language a little bit and basically dusted it off. It was dealing with upcoming energy developments, but I got a little concerned this year when I took a look at this bill, at least version A, in that the funds would go into an appropriation, as mentioned earlier, would go into the Southeast Energy Fund, and then we would lose total control over potentially the resulting outcome. So that is concerning. So we'll be going back and looking at that particular section of the legislation to make sure that our comfort level is where it should be. And right now, it's not very high. I'm also concerned from a broader level of the creep of our appropriating power from the legislative branch to the executive branch. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that this isn't another step in that direction. So, you know, there is a lot of underlying concerns here because the bill is so far-reaching that if we happen to have a rogue department heads over this, over these appropriations that go into this fund, we could have acquisitions and mergers and all kinds of stuff going on that would be out of the control of the legislature. So although the current head I'm pretty comfortable with, I don't know who's going to take her place or who's going to be next in the governor's chair. So we need to take our time and be diligent in this process so we make sure that the end result is that we take a move forward with CSIPNA and we don't create other problems for us along the way.
Yeah. Further comments or questions of Sarah Fisher-Goad? We, again, thank you for being as responsive as you have been, so it's very much appreciated. So with that, we have some people. First one is Jim Posey with MLNP. It indicates, I think it may be... Oh, you're just here. Okay, I wanted to make sure. The next is Joe Griffith, ArcTech, MEA. Please state your name and affiliation, and we welcome your testimony.
My name is Joe Griffith. I'm the president of ArcTech. That's the Alaska Rail Belt Cooperative. Cooperative Electric Transmission Company. It's a long name, but an easy device to remember, ArcTech. And for years, the legislature's been saying, get your act together and come down here with one point of view and we'll listen to you. Well, we have achieved that. I'm happy to report. And I think we have a single point of view that perhaps may interest you. ArcTech does support SB 42 as it has been written, and it was a long time in coming. It came straight from the mistake, I would call it, of 1993 that eliminated AEA and left us for nearly 20 years without an energy policy or an energy agency that was doing the work that is needed for infrastructure in energy. AEA must be able to construct and own, and that really is the major change other than the proposed financing that's in there. And the people are doing the work today. They're just doing it under the guise of ADA rather than under AEA's head and management. Before 1993, AEA was our energy plan, our energy policy, and they have some substantial successes. Bradley Lake is probably the biggest, and it is the most successful project I think the state has ever done to this point. The Alaska Intertie from Willow to Healy is another success. To some extent, the Golden Valley Intertie from Healy to Fairbanks that was built from Rail Belt Energy Funds is also a big success. And as I say, we've done nothing since 1993 except have spats with each other over trying to dip into the pot and get a few dollars for infrastructure. We've run out of time on that. We can't continue that way. There are too many huge issues that face our state, and this electricity that we provide is the grease that makes our economy work, and that goes directly to the pocketbooks of all the people. I would love to say that in another arrangement, another world, perhaps the electric utilities would have the wherewithal to do all this themselves, and they could. But we're a bunch of co-ops, and we're little, and we don't have a lot of members. And any nickel you take out of their pocket is discretionary income they can't use for something else that creates adds more to the economy. The utilities could do this if we had the financial strength to do it, which we don't. That's why we need AEA and the role of holding the assets for the state, and we'll work out the details of how we get the projects put together. And I have here, and I think I've delivered to every one of your offices, a list of the ArcTech capital budgets, and you've probably seen them. So if you want to spool up AEA in a reasonable approach, here's a good way to start. Start small, get their teeth cut on doing projects, and by the time we get Susitna there, it will be spooled up and people can handle the job. You could give it to ADA. I heard that mentioned yesterday, I believe, that, well, ADA could do it. They could, but ADA is a bank, and you don't want your bank running your projects. So for that reason, I would say that's why you need to make AEA have the teeth it needs to get the job done. And I assure you there will be close cooperation with the utilities. And that's really what was the lid on Bradley Lake back when we did that project, was a group called the Project Management Committee that still today manages that effort. And there was a lot of shouting and teeth gnashing and pounding of the table before we got that all put together back pre-1985 when the project really was authorized. But the reason it worked as well as it did is because the AEA held it for the state. They built the project, and the utility sat on top of it and watched it very closely. There were times we met two or three times a week to see the progress of the project. The model is there. It works. We've got projects in front of us that must be done, irrespective of how we get there. We're all building power plants, and those are going to cost a lot of money. We have tremendous transmission shortfalls. We have regulation issues with other projects that are out there that need to be done. We do not need regulation from the RCA. That's the wrong thing to do. It was not at all required in Bradley Lake. It's not there. It's worked just fine for 25 years. The RCA doesn't do projects. They look at rates. They look at the rates of every single one of us on every power sales agreement we take in there and every rate filing that goes before them. And that's where their control is. You don't need two layers of it. You don't need to control a state entity who would do it. They're responsible to you and to the administration down on the third floor. I would be happy to answer any questions you might have. As I say, ARCHTEC supports it, MEA supports it, and we're happy to move on with you guys and AEA in any manner we need to be sure that we've got electricity in the future that's sustainable, economic, and meets the needs of our economy.
Thank you, Mr. Griffith. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think, you know, as we struggle through these resource issues across the state, I think we need to keep in mind a little bit just the magnitude of scale. Here we're looking at, what, a 400-megawatt project, roughly, in the Susitna area?
Yes.
Which this bill, was targeted and set up for. But in other areas, we're looking at 15, 20-megawatt, 10-megawatt, 5-megawatt, substantially smaller projects that this bill would give, I think, much more authority and power to AA than what would be necessary for such a scale difference. So I just want to put on the record, Mr. Chairman, that there's a substantial difference between what we're looking at here in Susitna and what we're looking at everywhere else in the state.
Senator Willikowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Every electrical utility manager that's come to my office, I've asked this question. I haven't yet gotten a chance to ask you this, but I think I know how you're going to answer it. But I just want to get it on the record because I don't think we've spent a whole lot of time talking about this. And that's if the state has a certain amount of money to spend, and we're about to make a commitment to bond for $5 billion, authorize AEA to go down that route. Are we better off putting that money towards a gas line? The people in Fairbanks are paying $1,000, $2,000 a month for their gas bills. They're paying $100, $200, $300 for their electrical bills. So Susitna Hydro doesn't help them with their gas, with their heating issues, and it keeps their electrical rates pretty much the way they are. Same in South Central. Doesn't help us with our gas issues. Probably keeps the electric rates where they are. Whereas if you build a gas pipeline or you put money towards a big line or you build a bolt line, maybe you solve both those problems. So I'm curious to hear your take on the allocation of the resources.
It's a good question and an appropriate one that we should all ask ourselves. And I assure you that our planning for future generation assets is dealing with that very issue. And you heard Senator Stedman say it's 400 megawatts. That's not enough to power the rail belt. So you still got to have the gas. The problem is with a little gas line, it isn't going to be economic. If we get the big one, which we should be working huckley buck for, otherwise our economy will suffer for other reasons, then it will be economic to put a tap on the big line and bring gas here. And you're always going to have gas to back up the big turbines on the lake. You just don't operate systems with only one source of power that's 125 miles north of here. So the answer is yes, do them both.
That's what everyone has said.
Good for it.
There's been statements as far as AEA owning and constructing the Wautauna project. What are the thoughts of the utilities as to the operation of Wautauna?
We would imagine it would operate, Senator Paskman, as does Bradley Lake, probably done through ArcTech or whatever ArcTech is called when it's constructed, as a coalition of the utilities that make the decisions and operate it, owned by the state. And in the case of both the Intertie and Bradley Lake, they have a veto power over certain aspects of our control, but we really do manage the Intertie ourselves, and we operate Bradley Lake. And it has been swimmingly effective in both cases.
What would need to be constructed as far as an Intertie with respect to the Wautauna project to connect in with the rest of the grid?
Another good question, because that's another big ticket item. I think you will come north out of the reservoir up to the Denali Highway area and then down the road to tie into the existing Intertie. If you could find the assets and the resources to do it, you would continue right on to Healy with a parallel Intertie and on down to Willow with one as well. You need two loops for that. And if you had two, then you would have a little more faith in your ability to keep the lights on. What you do not want to let happen are the lights go out, because with that big a unit on the line, the rail belt will go out if it dropped off for any reason.
Any comprehensive numbers as far as what any component of those Intertie would cost?
Well, yeah, I'm sure it'll end up in the papers, and I'll take a wag at it. But it's if you have to build all the way to Healy and you come all the way to Willow or Teeland, you're looking at probably another couple or $300 million to do what you need. I think you would do that in stages. You would get the power from the plant to the existing Intertie, and this was the plan, by the way. 25 years ago with Bradley, we were all going to build the additional Intertie system we needed. And then in 1993, as we just got that spooled up, AEA died an unnatural death, and nothing happened after that other than Golden Valley built the Intertie from Healy up to Fairbanks. Thank heavens they had that. But yes, it's going to be a big ticket item, but we must do it. We don't have any choice, folks.
Senator Willikowski.
Mr. Chair, one of the questions that I get asked fairly regularly is why doesn't the state build a huge electrical generation plant on the North Slope and then run a big Intertie down to Fairbanks South Central? Is that doable? Is that just completely
No, it's doable. It's just it's a terrible big-ticket item. The cost of 400 miles of Intertie is probably $2 billion because you got to cross some pretty rough country, and it's all out there by itself in a long ways, and it's still one single power source. And utilities can't live with just one power source. It would help a lot, and we probably should have done a lot of things on the North Slope. We probably should have built GTL plants up there. We'd be having different discussions today if we'd have done that when we talked about it the first time 20 years ago. The answer is it'd be wonderful to have it. Problem is it's going to be very, very expensive and, again, a single source.
And just how many megawatts could you ship down a DC line from the North Slope?
Oh, the big DC lines, they're 750. Yeah, they're huge lines. The ones that come out, very expensive. Yes, sir, they are.
Griffith, thank you very much.
Pleasure. And you all have my number. I'm happy to talk any time about this.
Thank you. We have Marilyn Leland. Marilyn, welcome to Senate Resources.
Thank you. And for the record, my name is Marilyn Leland. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Power Association. Our members, I think most of you already know, are the electric utilities from all around the state, rural and rail belt. And the way I describe it is our members provide power to roughly half a million Alaskans, so most Alaskans. As I think you've seen many of the utility people around the building here this week, we've been holding our annual legislative fly-in, and we've been having a lot of really good discussions with some of you, other legislators, administration folks, about the energy problems that Alaska faces. And, of course, much of that discussion has centered around the idea of large-scale hydropower for the rail belt. But our members believe that that's not the only answer to our problem. It really is a rural and a rail belt issue. Our members believe that it's going to take a very strong partnership between the electric utilities and the state in order to solve these problems. And this morning we had a board meeting at which they unanimously approved a resolution in support of expanding the statutory powers of the Alaska Energy Authority. And I'd like to just read the resolution into the record here. The Alaska legislature has adopted a goal of 50% renewable energy by 2025. The only way this goal can be met is with the construction of a major hydropower facility for the rail belt or other very large generation projects, the cost of which would be well beyond the financial ability of any of the individual Alaskan electric utilities. Therefore, the state will need to be an integral partner in the funding and construction of any such projects. The logical state entity for this partnership is the Alaska Energy Authority, but it is at present limited by its statutory authority. The Alaska Power Association supports the expansion of statutory powers of the AEA that would, at a minimum, allow the agency to acquire, construct, or own any interest in an electric project or any right to capacity of an electric project or to perform feasibility studies, design, and engineering with respect to power. And I have copies of the resolution here for you. The Alaska Power Association strongly urges you to expand the authorities of the Energy Authority to include working towards solutions not only for the rail belt, but for all of Alaska. We believe that the Alaska Energy Authority is in the best position to facilitate this work if it is given the powers that it once had to construct and own projects. Thank you.
Mr. Stepp will get a copy of that, and then we will distribute that to the committee members.
Thank you.
And, any questions by the committee of Marilyn? Seeing none, we thank you very much, and
thank you.
We appreciate the resolution, and we will distribute that to all the members.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mira Kohler?
She had to leave for a meeting.
Well, she's not here.
She was, but she had to leave.
Okay. Willard?
Dunham.
There we go. I see the H now. Dunham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee, for this opportunity to speak before you. My name is Willard Dunham, and I'm the mayor of the city of Seward. The opportunity to speak on Senate Bill 42, and I'm pleased to offer the city of Seward support on this bill for the Alaska Energy Authority, and we have passed a resolution by our city council in support of this action. As the state moves forward on its quest in the usage of renewables, both on the state and federal levels, we in Seward feel that an additional AEA uses would be very helpful in the overall implementation of the energy programs that we all are considered and vital to our state. Especially to be able to do feasibility studies and design. Right now, it's hard, ADA can't, as we understand in some of the things, ADA can't do this. But if we would like to see and the power AEA be able to do it. Our community is a very active participant in the rail belt utilities cooperative. RTEC. I never thought in all my career in news that I've been around a while that I'd ever be able to sit down and work with all the community, city utilities of the rail belt, all in the same rule, all pitching the same eye. And that's what RTEC's done. Things have, the earth has moved. So I would like to congratulate my compatriots and the announcement to you that, yes, it has been done. So this AEA was extremely helpful in doing this. And the accomplishment of the melding of the utilities, I don't believe could have been done without Marilyn and her group to do this and keep us going. And Joe has spoken highly of it and the ability of what we need. All of us sitting around here know what we went through with the Rail Belt Energy Fund that was in here. We were going to do great things. We were going to build our TA lines. We were going to put them all together. And believe me, as you look through that list that Joe has for you, we have made little progress. And most of the funds, as you're all aware, have been taken back by previous governors and administrations and moved back. So we would like to see, and the time has come and passed for us to do something and move forward in this. So in resource development, for us all, there's a lot of work to be done with the Alaska community, utilities and communities, all the communities in there. And if you were to total the total costs involved in the utilities, for us to even handle it, we think that the changes and the assistance that could come out of this bill, and I understand the legal process, that you're going to make some adjustments and changes. And there's heartburn. There's heartburn every time you lay a new draft out. No different on our city council. Very seldom do I actually get anything through the way I originally wanted it. So, but I think it builds and helps the needs that we've got. And I would like very much to endorse it, and I hope that you'll tweak it as you see fit, but not destroy it in the intent. And I thank you again for the opportunity to speak for you.
Thank you, Mr. Dunham. Any questions for Mr. Dunham?
Thank you very much.
And I don't have anyone else on the list that signed in locally. I have some people from Alaska Energy Authority that have, I think, signed in. And I don't know whether they're here. Are they here for testimony or just questions? Is there anyone else that's – I'm not intending on closing public testimony today because I think there's more to be heard by this committee, but I do think that it's worth commenting upon that it was useful and important information that we've heard from everyone that has appeared before us today. So brief at ease. Senate Resources back to order. What we will do is we will close public testimony because there is no one here, and if there is the necessity, we will again open it up, and I think that that may be the more appropriate procedural process to follow, so I just think that that's important. Sarah, I know that I believe that did you want to have a couple of minutes just to make any comments or observations? It's certainly available for you if you would like to do so.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, I'm Sarah Fisher Goad, Executive Director of the Alaska Energy Authority. I do want to thank the committee for allowing the further testimony today, and I appreciate the APA, ARCTEC, and Mr. Griffith, and the Mayor of Seward and Marilyn Leland testifying on behalf of this. I hope the issue that I think what we're trying to make sure folks understand is that it is, although Susitna is in somewhat the 800-pound gorilla in the room with respect to what we're trying to do, AEA has a statewide perspective. We have a lot of programs and folks that are dedicated to working on advancing and helping solve the energy issues of the state of Alaska. So I appreciate it, and I look forward to working with the committee on the appropriate committee substitute for SB 42.
Thank you. Seeing no questions, we thank you. And did you,
yeah, before you.
Yeah. Why don't you? Senator Wagner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before we adjourn today, I just want to give the public and the committee a little announcement. As you know, last year, Senator McGuire and I worked kind of jointly with a bill that finally got called the Cook Inlet Stampede, and for years we've been trying to get a jackup rig back up into Cook Inlet. So I'd just like to read a little bit of a release from Buccaneer Energy. It says, Buccaneer Energy Limited, Buccaneer or the company, is pleased to advise that the Board of Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, known as ADA, has approved the expenditure of additional funds up to $200,000, which will be used to further develop a variety of definitive agreements that would authorize the authority to invest up to $30 million U.S. for the purpose of acquiring, modifying, mobilizing a jackup rig to operate in the Cook Inlet, Alaska. The total cost of the project is anticipated to be approximately $85 million U.S. The funding of this project, subject to final agreements being concluded, would involve ADA's contribution of the $30 million in capital for part ownership of the jackup rig. And if you would like, my office can distribute this to in full to the people. But one of the things we get for the $30 million is a guarantee by Buccaneer that they will drill no less than a minimum of four wells in Cook Inlet as soon as the jackup rig comes and the drilling season permits. Hopefully one well this year, and two the next year at least, and then one the following year. And then it's also going to be available to other people who own other leases who wish to drill other wells. So hopefully we're on the way.
Good news.
Huh? Oh, yeah. And for Mr. Stedman, I was supposed to say, Hail Mary Pass got caught. Now they're running to the goal line. But that's good news for the whole South Central area, and actually good news for the state of Alaska. So,
with that, that is great news for Alaska and Cook Inlet, especially with what happened this week in Nikiski. I think it has a lot of people edgy as to the prospects of the future of Alaska and energy. With that, we will conclude today's meeting. Remember, there is no meeting Friday. The next meeting is 10 a.m. this Saturday, and that will be to address Senate Bill 24 and Senate Bill 44. And
public hearing. Yeah.
Public hearing. That 44, I believe, is the Southwest Forest and or Southeast Forest.
Southeast Forest.
Southeast Forest. And then can't remember.
20
fishing.
Yeah, the fish yeah, Senator McGuire's fish
fish guiding
bill.
Yes, little bill.
There you go.
24.
Yeah.
Hardly any public testimony, I'm sure.
So, public testimony on Senator McGuire's bill and the Southeast Forest bill. With that, Senate Resources adjourned.